state lawmakers now have less than a week until the budget is due April 1st. They say, despite the coronavirus outbreak, they intend to meet the deadline and will use precautions to avoid meeting in large groups. They face a daunting task of putting together a spending plan while a multi-billion dollar deficit grows each day. More from the Legislative Gazette, Karen DeWitt.
Governor Andrew Cuomo says the budget deficit could rise to $15 billion as the stock market tanks and the economy's at a standstill. Despite those challenges, Cuomo is confident a spending plan can be in place by April 1, and it can even have some of the other unrelated items in it that Cuomo has proposed. They include legalizing the adult use of recreational marijuana, rolling back some of the bail reform changes that ended most forms of cash bail on January 1, and banning flavored vaping products.
We will pass a budget and address the policy items that we laid out and we discussed, because it's not just about passing a budget and the numbers. There are many policy initiatives that I laid out back in January, and we're going to pursue all of them.
Cuomo is also seeking greater powers in the budget to move money around later in the year as the state's true financial picture becomes clearer. His budget director, Robert Mujica, explains.
We need a budget that's in place that gives us the flexibility to hold payments back, modulate things, move payments ahead of time for health care. So that's really the budget that you're going to need.
David Friedfeld with the fiscal watchdog group Citizens Budget Commission says giving the governor new powers in the budget would set a bad precedent. He says it's better to have the legislature come back later in the year when hopefully it will be safe to meet again and consider the changes.
And they should come back in 3 months, 6 months, whenever's necessary in order to amend the budget. It's better to do that than set up a system where the executive would enshrine themselves with additional power.
Some, including the Republican minority party leaders in both houses of the legislature, say lawmakers should do a bare-bones budget that sticks to spending-related items. They say there's time to do other policy initiatives later in the year, when hopefully it will be safe for the full legislature to meet again and to once again allow lobbyists and interest groups into the Capitol. The Capitol is currently closed to visitors. Friedfeld agrees.
Later on, whenever things return to normal, then you could come back and address those important policy issues.
The Senate and Assembly have not met in over a week. When they briefly met on March 18th to approve paid sick leave for quarantined workers, Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins said the entire spending plan has to be reevaluated.
Every single assumption that we had has got to be challenged and has got to be adjusted for the realities that we are in.
Progressive groups and some Democratic lawmakers want to raise taxes on the wealthy to help balance the budget. Stewart-Cousins is against that idea. She represents parts of Westchester County, and several members of her Democratic conference are from Long Island, where combined state and local taxes are already the highest in the nation.
I don't know how we tax our way, frankly, out of this.
Stewart-Cousins says federal help is needed. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie agrees that New York is not going to be able to manage on its own.
If we don't do something that continues a circulation of money into the national economy and here in New York State, we are going to be headed for maybe not even a recession, but a total depression.
Governor Cuomo is not pleased with federal bailout efforts so far, though, and he says the bill passed by Congress is not enough. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, there's no question. You've been talking about it since day one, since the first press briefing, that Governor Andrew Cuomo has become the politician of the moment. We've been witnessing his straightforward and sometimes emotional, caring approach to taking care of New York and the people.
Listen, I am not Andrew Cuomo's brother. Christopher is, and he knows what his brother is doing. I can say, however, that I know him better than most. I think that's fair. I've had tons of conversations with him this year. I've never seen anything like his performance. New York is the epicenter right now. It's a mess. He goes out every day. He offers hope, but he also is straightforward about how badly things are going in terms of the exponential rate of increase, and we see that. Now, there are some signs that it may be slowing a little bit, but in the end, we are seeing morgues, temporary morgues being set up outside hospitals. We're seeing the medical staff heroically who have retired coming back and saying, I want to be part of this, or I will be part of this since the governor has asked me to. Look, David, this gives us a look at this governor as a potential presidential candidate. I can't tell you the amount of mail that I'm getting about this. This is a unique time. This is when you really have to look to your bench and say, who's the strongest? So while this presidential candidate, Joe Biden, has promised that it will be a woman who would be the vice presidential candidate, I'm looking at Cuomo, who is younger, more vigorous than Joe Biden, that's for sure, and a very good friend of Biden's, as a potential vice presidential candidate. Biden, before the pandemic, he made it clear it would be a woman. This may be a time when we need the strength of our best and our brightest, and that looks like, to me, like Andrew Cuomo. There are many people who are saying, Alan, that's anti-feminist and all the rest. It is not. I'm the guy who said we ought to have a female president of the United States. I've always believed that. I have a woman on my panel in the morning who rejected that, said a woman will not be elected. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter. What matters is getting the best, the strongest, the brightest, and we have to look to our bench to see who that is right now.
Is it possible that he gets picked for some other post in a, let's say, forthcoming Biden administration?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, I could see him as attorney general if he wanted to. You know, there is something unique about being a governor. A governor really has no boss. The people are the boss. You go to work for a president and you say the wrong thing or somebody gets mad at you and the pressure gets too big at the top. That's another thing. On the other hand, nobody has ever been elected governor four times. And Andrew Cuomo is facing that very Herculean task of doing that, something that was denied to his father. So, yes, I have no doubt that he'll be offered something in the cabinet, but I don't know that if I were him, I would take it.
So is this pandemic ultimately going to help or hurt the governor? In other words, we've got a budget process. There's going to be serious economic pain. Once we get through that, we'll see what will happen at the ballot box, obviously. But who do they got on the Republican side? I see now State Senate Minority Leader John Flanagan won't seek re-election. It's more than a dozen Republicans now that are out.
That's because in the state Senate, even the gerrymander has not worked to their benefit. In other words, in the old days, they could look at the computer and say, draw me districts where we can't lose. They ran out of people to take from one place and put into the other, and so now they're done. And, you know, these guys who really were very powerful, they were the chairman of all the committees, they were making all of the arrangements about how it would be distributed and what money would be spent, that's all over now. And so they're saying, who wants to hang around to be treated the way that we treated the Democrats all of these years?
One of the things that Governor Cuomo was hammering and has been hammering is the federal government on resources. And one of the things he's been pushing the president, vice president, the whole task force is to invoke the Defense Production Act so that they can have the government manufacture some of these medical supplies they need. And for whatever reason, and there's been some confusion along the way, they haven't done that, saying, well, it's leverage to get for-profit companies to help.
Yeah, well, this president has been basically saying they'll step forward and do it on their own. They will not. You know, greed and stock prices and all the rest of it determine the way many of these people work. Of course he should have invoked it. It would have looked presidential. It would have been presidential. And we could have said it's disgraceful that people would die because there aren't enough ventilators in the hospitals and there isn't enough way to take care of them. Come on. You know, you'd have to be from a strange place not to understand why he is refusing to do what he should be doing. He says he's invoked it, but we don't see the evidence.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Two drive-through testing sites opened this week in the Mid-Hudson Valley. They were made possible through a local healthcare provider in partnership with Dutchess and Ulster counties. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
New Vance Health opened collection sites in Ulster County, at Tech City in Kingston, and in Dutchess County, at Dutchess Stadium in Fishkill. New Vance Health spokesman Timian Massey says on the first day, the Ulster County site administered 79 tests and the Dutchess site, which was open for less than 4 hours, 36 tests. He expects the numbers to increase in the coming weeks.
We're just getting word out now. There was a lot of work that had to be done to set up these two sites, and we're very grateful to everybody in the county governments in Ulster and Dutchess working very closely with us to put these sites up in less than a week.
He says New Vance recognized the need, especially after seeing a number of area residents heading to the emergency room at Northern Dutchess Hospital for testing, against advice to contact a physician first.
These are not actual testing sites. This is where we collect the specimen, which comes from a nasal swab. It is then sent to an outside lab for the actual test results, and it could take up to 6 days for those results to come in.
New Vance Health, whose hospitals and outpatient locations include Vassar Brothers Medical Center, also has collection sites up and running in Danbury and Norwalk, Connecticut.
You know, other parts of the state have had more state support to get the testing sites up. We really had to put this together here on the ground.
Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, during a Facebook town hall update, said you must be pre-screened and have a physician's order before scheduling an appointment at the New Vance locations.
We won't yet have the capacity to test everyone who ideally wants to be tested yet. That's our goal. But right now, we have to prioritize.
Ryan says the Kingston location can handle 200 tests daily.
We are planning to have a second site up down in Ellenville by March 31st latest, hopefully sooner than that. The bottom line to me is that we've seen this in other parts of the world and in the country. Mobile testing and boosting our testing capacity will absolutely save lives.
New Vance's Massey.
We're very fortunate that we have a good supply chain for now with the personal protective equipment, or PPE as it's commonly called, to make sure that our healthcare providers are properly protected.
He says to ensure adequate supply continues, New Vance is scouring every source at home and abroad to equip healthcare providers. Locally, he says a number of distilleries are using their alcohol to produce hand sanitizer, while a few locations are working on 3D-printed face shields. Again, Ryan.
We don't have enough of everything. We don't have enough beds, we don't have enough ICU beds, and we don't have enough respirators.
On Monday, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed an executive order requiring all hospitals to increase capacity by a minimum of 50%. Ryan says local hospitals are working on it.
I am very concerned about our current hospital capacity. We know we don't have what we need. And ultimately, I hope that as New York State builds downstate for surge hospital capacities, that I've encouraged the governor and his team to look here in the Hudson Valley as a next site to build one of those. We've scouted several locations, and we stand ready to do that. And we know that that is going to be a need. So we'll continue to plan for and advocate for that.
Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro.
And so in Dutchess County, we're working with our hospital networks. We're prepared to open an alternative care facility.
He says Dutchess Community College would be the site of such a facility as part of the county's pandemic response plan. He says county officials will decide in 2 weeks whether such a site needs to be set up for individuals who don't need intensive hospital care. Both collection sites are open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., subject to change.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
President Trump named Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute this week as a member of a new public-private effort to provide computing resources in the fight against COVID-19. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
Organizations across the healthcare industry are using AI and data analytics to track and control the impact of COVID-19. RPI in Troy is offering the research community access to AMOS, its Artificial Intelligence Multiprocessing Optimized System, which RPI's Vice President for Information Services and Technology, John Kolb, says has amazing computational capabilities.
AMOS is the most powerful supercomputer in a U.S. university. It's rated at about 8, what they call petaflops, or 8 quadrillion calculations per second. And to put that in perspective, and this is really one of the things you have to bring to bear first, is really just immense computation, is that's a million calculations per person in the world per second. So if you're going to model something like a pandemic that's affecting the entire world's population, having something that can do those types of calculations is really important.
Kolb says AMOS, located at the Rensselaer Center for Computational Innovations, can process large amounts of data about the virus very quickly.
And so all of these things require very complex understanding and modeling folded in with all the data that we can have. And so this is very important in terms of what kinds of interventions may work, be they antiviral interventions or other pharmacological interventions, or whether it's a vaccine that needs to be developed, clearly. And so that's kind of where we are, as well as understanding who really is vulnerable.
RPI President Shirley Jackson adds, epidemiological data can uncover a lot about how COVID-19 moves through populations. Understanding which populations are most at risk, along with how many people die, and for survivors, the quantity and quality of recovery.
How do you really protect people? And because the at some point, one wants the economy to get going again, and we've got to have those answers. And you know, and this has to go on while we're even in the middle of what we're doing, and where our healthcare workers are doing heroic things. Our researchers are working just as furiously to help here and to come up with effective intervention strategies.
Jackson expects faculty, staff, and graduates all will have roles in working on the pandemic. Kolb says creative minds, both at RPI and nationwide, will be put to the test, modeling the disease, its spread, analyzing its blooms and hotspots, and working on a vaccine.
Is it possible to repurpose other drugs, and how do you do studies? Can we do studies that simulate those actual studies rather than, you know, having to do them with people, or can we take ones that are done with people and cross-correlate and so on? So I think there's a lot of creative things that researchers could bring to the table, and how do we help enable that?
In December 2019, RPI launched AMOS for use by public and private industry partners across New York State. There's more at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Governor Andrew Cuomo has ordered the closure of or restricted the operations of schools, restaurants, bars, gyms, and movie theaters across the state, forcing Capital Region residents and businesses alike to get creative in order to stay active. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports.
Good morning, Shannon. Good morning, Michelle. Good morning, Dane. All right, okay. So we've already got a couple votes for Neon Tunnel. We've got a vote for Underwater 2.
At least 60 kids and their families gathered recently around their computers to tune into Albany Ken Code instructor Stacy Brissett's Facebook Live walkthrough of the coding program Scratch. Many chimed in via the comments about what background image they thought Brissett should use for her new Pong-like video game, all while creating their own games, asking questions, and sharing their decisions. Albany Ken Code CEO Anne Marie Lanasey says the free online classes are part of an effort to keep shut-in kids and their families entertained amid the COVID-19 outbreak.
And I know the schools are doing a great job of providing what they can at this challenging time and everything happening so quickly, but we thought that where we can provide any more help and lift to get children meaningful educational experiences, that we are going to quickly shift all of our attention to making that happen.
She adds that shift was quick, but not easy. Albany Ken Code moved its formal workforce classes online as soon as BOCES classrooms and community colleges began to close, and worked with Spectrum to deploy Wi-Fi to students in need. As for its free Facebook lessons, Lanasey says the nonprofit is taking things week by week, with schedules posted on its Facebook page. She expects to add adult classes soon, covering HTML, CSS, Python, and more.
Because many people are out of work right now, this is a perfect opportunity for them to be building skills for the digital economy that's ahead and already thrust upon us. So we are looking to reach adults as well that want to become more digitally literate and learn the skills of potentially becoming software sector employees in the future.
I'm going to bend my knee, bend my right knee, lift my arms out to the sides. And then inhale, straighten your front leg, lift the arms up. Exhale, bend into your warrior two.
Albany Kencode isn't the only Capital Region business turning to Facebook. If coding isn't your style, Heartspace Yoga and Healing Arts in Albany and Troy is offering free daily online yoga sessions, ranging from Hatha Yoga, heard here with instructor Martha Moskowitz, to Gentle Flow and Sparkle Yoga. Studio owner Andrew Cassius says the classes are meant to bring the community together.
Everybody's feeling such stress and heaviness. And stress and anxiety is actually bad for your immune system. So how can we help to keep our clients' members healthy? Yoga, that's what we like to do.
Classes are planned a week in advance and posted on Facebook. Cassius says HeartSpace is no stranger to offering free classes. The studio typically hosts free seminars at Albany's Washington Park and Riverfront Park in Troy. But like a lot of area businesses, that doesn't mean the studio isn't feeling the heat. It's selling gift cards to raise money for its basic expenses. And in the meantime, Cassius says the daily videos give instructors a chance to de-stress and stay active from the safety of their homes.
And we're trying to highlight each of our really amazing instructors. We have different teachers who stylistically vary, and they have students who enjoy seeing them, but we're giving each of our teachers an opportunity to present a class every day.
Restaurant and bar employees are perhaps some of the hardest hit amid the closures. Albany Distilling Company owner John Curtin says the distillery's manufacturing sector remains strong, but admits some facets, like in-person tastings at its bar on Livingston Avenue, are essentially on hold. To bridge the gap and give staff a chance to work if they like, Curtin says customers can now order some of the bar's most popular cocktails, like Brooklyn Bourbon and Smoked Manhattan, to go.
A lot of it is people, you know, want to maintain some element of normalcy. And again, it's such a novel idea that I think that's part of the appeal. The idea of getting a cocktail to go is pretty amusing.
Customers can order online Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings. Curtin says all orders are for pickup at the moment, with employees bringing bottled cocktails to customers' cars to limit contact, but the company is exploring shipping drinks. Like many distilleries, Curtin says the company is also making hand sanitizer to address the growing shortage.
We're expecting a shipment of alcohol on Wednesday. We're reaching out to the fire department and hospitals and places that might have shortages and seeing what we can do, but if there's anybody who has a dire need for it, please reach out to us.
All three businesses say they appreciate the opportunity to give back. How long they'll have to, of course, remains up in the air. For more information on these events, go to WAMC.org. Reporting from Albany, I'm Jesse King.
With restrictions on crowd size under social distancing rules, the coronavirus outbreak has halted live performances and sent bands and entertainers home. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard spoke with several working musicians who depend on touring and are wondering what to do next.
Philadelphia-based rock band Mannequin Pussy kicked off a nationwide tour on February 28th. With a slot opening for indie favorites Best Coast, the group was leaving Chicago on March 13th when Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed an executive order banning gatherings of more than 250 people. Marissa DeBeese sings and plays guitar in the band.
We were on our way to Detroit, and then since we're from Philly, it's about 10 hours from Detroit, so we're like, you know what? Let's just drive home. This tour's over.
Just a few days earlier, organizers of the Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival in California postponed their event. With a third album released last year, Mannequin Pussy had been scheduled to perform. With the spreading virus, the band couldn't continue.
That first part of a tour is when you're making up all your expenses still. You're not quite out of the hole. So it takes time to kind of climb out of there. And I think right at the point that bands were starting to break even on their expenses is when everything got shut down.
This spring could have been a jumping off point for Brooklyn-based trio Thick, which released its debut full-length album earlier this month after years of generating buzz in New York City. Nikki Sisti, Thick guitarist and vocalist, said it felt like all the stars were aligned.
We're working with a booking agent, so we booked this awesome national tour that we've never done before. We've never really done a national tour, let alone supporting a bigger act.
But as the days passed, the virus got worse. South by Southwest, the Austin, Texas event that draws bands, fans, and labels alike, was canceled. Thick, planning to play during the event, called off their tour.
It kind of feels like we hit a brick wall.
Kate Black, who plays bass and sings in Thick, said the band had to make huge changes to their personal lives before embarking on their first national tour.
There's a ton of fear involved when you kind of choose to leave stability. And once we made that choice, kind of the rug was pulled out beneath us, and it looks like we're going to be, I don't know, figuring it out for a little bit longer.
For working bands that rely on touring for their income, canceling shows is a major hit. With canceled tours and non-essential businesses closed, musicians, like everyone else, are in a bind.
I definitely understand that this is a time where everybody is going to be under a lot of financial strain.
Digital music hosting website Bandcamp, where many independent musicians put their songs up for purchase, withheld all fees for 24 hours last Friday. And some labels are finding other ways to showcase their musicians. On Monday, Izzy True's label Don Giovanni hosted a live stream concert with several groups. The band members in Thick say they want to find a way to broadcast a session on social media, but right now, Kate Black says they are keeping apart as a precaution.
Like, we're even removed from each other, let alone from the rest of the world, which is definitely might be the most difficult part of all of it.
I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2013. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.